I told the president he just promoted me, and he said he's sorry. Brethren, I've chosen as my text for these remarks, trust in the Lord. I hope that what I say will be appropriate for all priesthood bearers. I have particularly in mind, however, the Aaronic priesthood youth. I hope that every one of you tonight can remember when this is over that what I talked about was trust in the Lord, and that you will have a determination, your determination to trust in Him strengthened. The command to trust in the Lord is oft repeated by the Lord Himself. 10 months before the church was organized, He said to Hiram Smith through his brother the prophet, "I am the light which shineth in darkness, and by my power I give these words unto thee. Put your trust in that Spirit which leadeth to do good, yea, to do justly, to walk humbly, to judge righteously, and this is my Spirit, which shall fill your soul with joy." 2 years later, speaking of Bishop Newell K. Whitney, the Lord said, "Let him trust in me, and he shall not be confounded, and a hair of his head shall not fall to the ground unnoticed." In 1841, when William Law was concerned about health, the health of his children, because of the sickness among the people at Nauvoo, the Lord said, "Let my servant William put his trust in me and cease to fear concerning his family because of the sickness of the land. If ye love me, keep my commandments, and the sickness of the land shall redound to your glory." Comforting the people who had been driven into the wilderness by with the wicked King Noah, Alma explained to them that although the Lord seeth fit to chasten his people, although he trieth their patience and their faith, nevertheless, whosoever putteth his trust in him, the same shall be lifted up at the last day. One of the most dramatic evidences recorded in the scriptures that trusting in the Lord brings rewards was the vanquishing of the great Goliath by young David. His implicit trust enabled him to accomplish the great feat. You will remember that the Philistines and Israel were at war. The Philistines gathered together their armies to battle on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. That was about 9 feet and 6 inches. And he had on a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail weighing 156 pounds. In addition, he carried a shield of brass on his back, a heavy plate of metal armor on his legs, and a helmet of brass on his head. And in his hand, he carried a spear with a shaft like a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron battering ram type of head, weighing in excess of 18 pounds. This bully cried to the armies of Israel, "Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then ye shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. The record says that when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. And this challenge Goliath made morning and evening for 40 days. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and they were afraid. While this was going on, young David reached the camp with a message from his father for his elder brothers who were fighting, serving in Saul's army. And when he heard the Goliath challenge, he spake to the men that stood by him, saying, Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Then when King Saul heard about what David had said, he sent for him. And David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant, speaking of himself, will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he's a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep. That is, I kept my father's sheep. And there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him, and smote him, and delivered him out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by the beard, and smote him, and slew him. I slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord, now we come to the trust that this boy had in the Lord. David said, moreover, the Lord delivered me out of the paw of the lion, and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hands of this Philistine. And so Saul said to David, Go, and the Lord be with thee. Saul then armed David with his own armor, but it was too heavy for David, and he hadn't been used to wearing armor, so he took it off. And he took his staff in his hand, and chose him 5 stones out of the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and then he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near to David. And the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he was disgusted. The record said he disdained him, for he was but a youth. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David in the name of all the heathen gods he knew. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I'll give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. And then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day, continued David, this day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hands, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the hosts of the Philistine this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, and all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hands. And it came to pass that when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hasted, that is, he hurried and ran toward the Philistine, and put his hand in his bag, and took thence a stone, and slang it, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, just below his helmet band, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his head, and he fell upon his face to the earth. Now this was a very new experience for the Philistine. He'd never, and nothing like that. Nothing like that had ever entered into his head before. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and smote the Philistines and slew them. Now the reason David accomplished it, this great defeat, was because he trusted in and was led by the Lord. The Philistines, when that happened, all panicked, and there was a great victory that day for the armies of Israel. Now here's another illustration from the scriptures. This is from the Book of Mormon, and it was a remarkable demonstration of how the Lord sustains those who put their trust in him. In the report which Helaman gave of the two to his leader Moroni of his so-called 2,000 sons, these were young men who were the sons of the Ammonites. They were converted Lamanites, but their fathers had taken an oath that they would not go to war again. But these boys were not old enough to take the oath, and so they were not bound with it. And they volunteered to help the Nephites against the invasion of the Lamanites. They served under General Helaman and were called Helaman's sons. When the Nephite army was threatened with overwhelming odds by the Lamanites, Helaman said to these men, "What say ye, my sons? Will ye go against them to battle?" And they answered, "Behold, our God is with us, and he will not suffer that we should fall. Then let us go forth." Now they never had fought, yet they did not fear death, and they did think more upon the liberty of their fathers than they did upon their lives. Yea, they had been taught by their mothers that if they did not doubt, God would deliver them. And they rehearsed the words of their mothers, saying, "We do not doubt, our mothers knew. "And it came to pass," continued Helaman in his report to Moroni, "that we did surround the Lamanites and did slay them, yea, insomuch that they were compelled to deliver up their weapons of war and also themselves as prisoners of war. And now when they had surrendered themselves up unto us, behold, I numbered these young men who had fought with me, and to my great joy, there had not one soul of them fallen to the earth. Yea, and they had fought as if with the strength of God. Never were men known to have fought with such miraculous strength." Following a later battle, Helaman continued in his report, "My little band were firm before the Lamanites, and they did obey and observe to perform every word of command with steadfastness. Yea, even according to their faith, it was done unto them. And it came to pass that there were 200 out of my 2,060 who had fainted because of the loss of blood, nevertheless, according to the goodness of God and to our great astonishment, and also the foes of our whole army, there was not one soul of them who did perish. And now their preservation was astonishing to our whole army, yea, that they should be spared while there was 1,000 of our brethren who were slain. And we do justly ascribe to the miraculous power of God. Why? Because of their exceeding faith in that which they had been taught to believe, that there was a just God, and whosoever did not doubt that they should be preserved by his marvelous power. Now this was the faith of these of whom I have spoken. They are young, and their minds are firm, and they do put their trust in God continually. President Heber J. Grant tells of a different type of reward that comes from trusting in the Lord. When he was a young man, he heard his bishop in a sacrament meeting, which was then held on Thursdays. In the early days, we held our sacrament meetings on Thursdays, make a strong appeal for donations. At that time, President Grant had $50 in his pocket, which he intended to deposit in the bank. But he was so impressed by his bishop's appeal that he tendered the whole $50 to the bishop. The bishop took $5 of it and handed back the $45, stating that $5 was his full share. And then President Grant replied, "Bishop Woolley, by what right do you rob me of putting the Lord in debt, my debt? Didn't you preach here today that the Lord rewards fourfold? My mother is a widow, and she needs $200. My boy," queried the bishop, "do you believe that if I take this other $45, you will get your $200 quicker?" "Certainly," replied President Grant. Now here was an expression of trusting in the Lord which the bishop could not withstand. He took the remaining $45. President Grant testified that on his way home from the fast meeting back to work, or not on the way home, but on his way back to his work from the fast meeting, an idea popped into his head, acting upon which he made $218.50. Speaking on this incident years later, he said, someone will say that it would have happened anyway. I do not think it would have happened. I do not think I would have got the idea. I am a firm believer that the Lord opens up the windows of heaven when we do our duty financially and pours out upon us blessings of a spiritual nature which are of far greater value than temporal things. But I believe he also gives us blessings of a temporal nature. In the Mission President Seminar last June, Elder Thomas S. Mountson told of the great faith and trust in the Lord of Randall Ellsworth, a missionary who, in Brother Monson's words, now I'm quoting Brother Monson's words, was crushed under that devastating earthquake in Guatemala, pinned for, I think, 12 hours, found himself totally paralyzed from the waist down, kidney functions not present, no hope to ever walk again. He was flown to Maryland and interviewed in the hospital by a television reporter. The television reporter said to him, "The doctors say you will not walk again. What do you think?" Elder Ellsworth said, "I will not only walk again, But I have a call from a prophet to serve a mission in Guatemala, and I shall go back to Guatemala and finish that mission. He exercised twice the requirements outlined by the doctor. He exerted his faith. He received a blessing from the priesthood, and his recovery was miraculous. It astounded the physicians and the specialists. He began to be able to stand on his feet. Then he could walk with crutches. And then the doctor said to him, "You may return to the mission field if the church will permit you to go." He went. We sent him to Guatemala. He returned to the land to which he had been called, to the people whom he dearly loved. And while there, he was walking, proselyting a full schedule with a cane in each hand. His mission president looked at him and said, "Elder Ellsworth, with the faith that you have, why don't you throw those canes away and walk?" And Elder Ellsworth said, "If you have that kind of faith in me, take the canes." He put them down. He put down the canes and has never used them since. Brethren, you young men particularly, I bear my testimony to you that I know that the Lord rewards those who put their trust in Him. May we learn that when we're young and practice it through our lives, so that we can testify as these experiences testify, in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.